Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
His third game in a row tomorrow night in Game 7 against the Bucks. Irving has a right ankle sprain. We've got a Game 6 doubleheader with coverage starting at 7 Eastern on ESPN Radio, TV, and the app tonight. 76ers and Hawks with Atlanta going for the clincher at home. Then TV and the app will have Jazz and Clippers. The Clippers leading 3-2, but Kawhi Leonard is out tonight. Donovan Mitchell and Mike Conley Jr. questionable for the Jazz. Dirk Nowitzki is back with the Mavericks, this time in the front office as a special advisor. ESPN's Bobby Marks.
When you have a franchise player in Luka, you better do everything possible to make sure he's there for the foreseeable future.
Bobby Marks on Greeny. Nowitzki will help the team hire a new GM and coach. Shohei Ohtani of the Angels is the first player to commit for July's home run derby. He's also the first pitcher and the first Japanese-born player ever in the derby.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
It is Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and Sirius XM Channel 80. You can also watch us. Come look at us on ESPN+. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. John Barry, our ESPN Radio NBA analyst, going to stop by in a little bit, get us ready for some of the hoops coming up tonight. Mike Golic Jr., Trevor Scales, kind enough to hang out with us as Janae is getting ready to face the Phoenix Mercury tonight here as a member of the Sparks. Guys, make sure you check out Trevor on Sports Nation along with Taylor Twellman and Ashley Brewer. Always a great time over there, Trev.
Good old time. It's always a pleasure to get you involved over there, too. So, yeah, it's good times had by all right here on ESPN+.
It is. And it's felt like that for most of the NBA postseason, Trev. Like, I'm sure you guys are like us. The last few days especially have been sort of a whirlwind. June 16th had more NBA news per capita than any day I can remember in quite some time. And we know a lot of it is now starting to center around Game 7s in the NBA, Game 6s, closeout potential like we have tonight for a team like the Clippers. But the Milwaukee Bucks managed to stave off that elimination last night. They beat the Nets in Game 6. And so now we get Game 7 in that series. Trev, grading Giannis' performance, where are you at on Milwaukee's star player? Because he had a big night. Chris Middleton had a big night for that team. They ultimately get the win. But is this at a place where you now expect them to be the team moving on from this series?
The two of them combining for 68 points is encouraging, without a doubt. There is something to be said for the way that they got their offense going, taking advantage of transition opportunities, allowing Giannis to not feel the pressure of, hey, go make a shot for us, we need it. Tim Legler, we had a chance to speak with him on Sports Nation, and I thought he put it wonderfully, and I think this might have been before the cameras even came on. He said, look, the Bucks are a team that thrive in any scenario that is not a one-possession game. If it boils down to a last-shot opportunity, you're not necessarily keen on the idea of the Bucks beating out the Nets in that scenario, because we're looking at a Nets roster that has plenty of dudes that can take that one shot. With the Bucks, there is one man and one man only, and his name is not filled with vowels in the last name. It's Chris Middleton. That's the only one that you're typically looking at when it comes to the offensive versatility that we discussed earlier in the show. So, with all of that being said, nah, I'm not riding with Milwaukee, dog. Like, I can't. Not only is that element there when it comes to the idea of them not thriving in one-possession games, but it's also, look, maybe I'm a fool for taking in the entirety of the Bucks franchise's history, but them having the worst winning percentage in Game 7s and anybody that's played above three games, like, that's a little jarring. And it kind of speaks to not only just the recent history of the inability to get up out of the elimination scenarios at large, but it's also just like one of those curses that we bring up time and time again in sports. It kind of applies occasionally. I'm a believer in some of that stuff.
Well, I was going to say, you're an Atlanta sports fan,
right?
So I don't think you have any choice but to believe in that stuff, Trev. Like, that
up.
Seems like self-preservation.
Exactly. It's a defense mechanism.
It is a defense mechanism, and I think part of this is what also factors, like every season generally comes down to this, but this NBA postseason, we know more than most. We've seen more All-Stars miss games than ever before in the league's history during this run, and Kyrie Irving, it's announced, is going to be out for this Game 7. And so the other question, Trev, is what do we think we can get out of James Harden? Because Game 5 of this series, he was out there, but in name and image only, because his likeness was nowhere to be found. I guess it might be his likeness out there. maybe his image of him. I'm not exactly sure where I was going with that one, but you understand.
He wasn't
getting any buckets out there in Game 5. Game 6 was a little better. So do you buy that progress from him, Trev? Because I'm of the inclination now. I trust Kevin Durant. Like, if I'm looking at the way I grade this series going into Game 7, the home teams have dominated in this series. They have been the ones getting wins. Kevin Durant, I know, is going to consistently give you above 30 points and be a playmaker in this game. It's just, who do you trust? Who's the secondary character in these stories that you trust enough to get this done? And we talked about Chris Middleton and Giannis, some of the options on that team with Drew Holiday and others. For Brooklyn, it's going to have to be Blake Griffin, Joe Harris, Shamet, one of these other players that's got the ability to step up. So do you think Harden can give them enough to factor into that in a way that tilts this for Brooklyn?
There's been a subtle progression in my mind and in my eyes as I watch those games of James Harden and his game as far as getting back to what we know James Harden to do. That big body, turning the corner, getting to the rim, drawing contact, accepting said contact, and making a play happen at the rim. We saw him take 5 shots outside of the arc in the first half, miss all 5 of them, not score a single point in game, 5? Game 6, he started to move in. Now, granted, he started to make the shots that he took in Game 5, but that's part of his legs coming up underneath him, him getting used to how much he can push said hamstring. And so I'm of the belief that in Game 7, we're going to see, look, James Harden is going to take the parachute off. He's going to say, I'm not using this emergency brake by any stretch of the imagination, and I'm going to go full go. And if this tire blows out on me, so be it. It was Game 7, and I had a chance to leave it all out on this court. And so I do believe that James Harden is on the track of steady progression as far as how much he's willing to exert and get out of that hamstring. And Game 7 is the last chance he has to just test it fully. And I believe that ends up being the difference for that Brooklyn team.
Chenan Golick Jr. here on ESPN Radio, Mike Golick Jr. and Trevor Scales. And the difference makers for each team, we've talked about so many of the big names on the dais for this, but Tim Legler, our ESPN NBA analyst, was on with Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin earlier and talked about the two names that he believes are going to ultimately decide the outcome of this game.
Obviously, a critical guy for the Bucks is Chris Middleton, and it might not sound like he should be an X factor, but he is, because he's been completely different at home than he is on the road. He was sensational in this one, 38. Well, can he go on the road in a Game 7? And he doesn't have to be 38 special, but can he be 26? You know, can he be 28? Can he do enough to augment what you know Giannis is going to bring from a production standpoint? You hope Drew Holiday is as good as he was tonight. And if Chris Middleton could play that way, they got a great chance. Now, the other one is Jeff Green. This is a guy who made 7 threes the other night, and I know that's not going to happen every night, but he can't also then just go and completely disappear the way that he did in this game. Because right now, James Harden is pretty one-dimensional. It's going to be a bunch of step-back threes. You know you're going to get 30-plus out of Durant. You can go ahead and book that. So where is the other offense coming from for the Nets? Jeff Green can be an X factor. He's got to lock and load, get something going. Obviously, guys like Blake Griffin, Joe Harris, one of those guys needs to step up. But I think Jeff Green is the guy I'm looking at based on what he did the other night to take some of that pressure off Durant.
Trev, the more and more I keep looking at this team, it feels like we're due for one of those Joe Harris games. I know I said that before Game 6, but we understand, and this goes back to the last couple of postseasons prior to the bubble, is the way role players just, any number of factors. Like, we know there's all these human things that go into all this, the comforts at home, having an understanding, and being used to the arena you're playing with, like, having a general place that, listen, as a role player and as someone who was definitely in that line when I was a player, you need more things going right around you to feel good enough to go and do up to the level that you have the ability and perform at. But I think Joe Harris specifically, because he's so potent from three, because we've seen that be time and time again the weapon that can erase deficits in the postseason or help bury teams like the Bucks, who haven't always been as consistent from there this series, it feels like that's a name we could and should be calling if the Nets ultimately end up as the team moving on.
That is a great call as far as like who you expect a little something from, but beyond that, even Jeff Green, right? That is a guy who, again, role player, someone who's a wily vet that is there to kind of supplement whatever offense you may have going forward. Last time we saw Uncle Jeff, he was out here snapping for, what was it, like 7 for 8 from 3? Like, you can expect just role players in general, as you said, just being on their home floor, having the support of the crowd, that benefits so much. And in a series in particular where the home team has won every daggone game. Like, this is one of those things that you can kind of look at and say, all right, yeah, we're due for one of those types of performances.
It is funny. I joked earlier in this series when the Bucks finally stole back a win or climbed towards that star teams in the postseason take on the personalities of their star player, and the Bucks really got back into the series taking on the personality of one P.J. Tucker, P.J. All-Ball Tucker, who went out there and checked his old college classmate and Kevin Durant, hook 'em horns. But it really seems to have been the formula for them. Stifle defensively, go after and be physical with them, and get that thing moving in transition. That's what we can expect with the NBA playoffs on ESPN Radio. Tune in Saturday for that Game 7 as Jeff Green and the Nets host P.J. Tucker and the Bucks, presented by Indeed. Coverage begins at 8 p.m. Eastern on most ESPN Radio stations. We don't have to worry about the talk of playoff expansion coming in the NBA. We've seen it come for other sports. And today in the world of college football, it took another big step towards becoming a real thing. 12 teams in college football's postseason. We'll tell you why that conversation is coming sooner than you thought next on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Jhené and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Tune in to an NL battle Sunday as the Braves host the Cardinals, presented by Credit Karma. Coverage of Sunday Night Baseball begins at 6 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app, and at 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Jhené Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Trevor Scales hanging out with us as Jhené Egbuemeke is off today. And Trevor, in the fall, people can also see you on the College Football Show on ESPN Digital, as well as on a number of other platforms covering college football. It's something you and I both played, Harvard and Notre Dame respectively here, and both love. I always like to start here for the college football playoff expansion conversation, because it took another step forward today. We're looking more and more like this could be a very real thing very soon. Is this always something you felt was necessary, Trev, when we got to four teams in the first place?
I can't say that I felt it was necessary, because I think the goal ultimately was to allow people to have more and more conversation outside of the two-team BCS model that we had. We achieved that with flying colors. It was automatic right off the rip. As soon as we got four, it was a discussion of who got left out in five and six. But I also thought it was an inevitability that we were going to have expansion. It was clear that four was never going to be enough. And I doubt that 12 will feel like enough. We will still be clamoring for 13 and 14 to be in the conversation once we get to 12 eventually. So not necessarily a necessity, but an eventuality, certainly.
Yeah, it felt inevitable, because you're right. This is about conversation. It's about the illusion of parity in college sports, because this won't change who wins. There are other conversations about scholarship limits that we can have if you want to really start to change the balance of power and all this. But at the very least, people are going to feel involved and loved up. This is done, like we said, to recruit more of the general fans, the casual fans of college football, who aren't just going to tune in for the Hawaii Bowl and the Cheez-It Bowl like some of the rest of us sickos will. Now, the reason this is all even more relevant today, our ESPN college football reporter Heather Dinich has an article up on .com right now that the proposal to expand the CFP to 12 teams now took another big step forward. The College Football Management Committee on Friday agreed to present this concept to the 11 university presidents and chancellors, who ultimately have the authority to make that decision. There's going to be a meeting Tuesday in Dallas. It's the 10 FBS conference commissioners and Notre Dame athletic director Jack Swarbrick who are going to be involved in this meetings to, quote, authorize the solicitation of feedback and begin feasibility assessments of any new formats. Now, Trevor, according to everyone involved in this, the earliest it looks like something might even happen is 2023, but does this all over but the crying at this point for the four-team playoff that we've known?
Absolutely. I think we are there to the point where people are being swayed on a progressive scale that only alludes to this being an actuality eventually, because it went from four within that 12-member committee to 11 now that are all on the same page as far as this needs to happen. And once you present it to those chancellors and presidents, and obviously you present it with the potential revenue attached to doing this expansion thing, like, that is only going to become more and more appealing to those with power in the institution that is college football. So, yeah, no, I don't see anything hindering this path, certainly not from a moral standpoint, and absolutely not from a financial standpoint.
Yeah, and that's going to be the key in all of this, is how the finances work out for the regular season, how the finances work out for the bowl system. Because you're right, morally, we already know they don't care about putting more games on these kids, and until they have the kind of group representation that might push back on something like that, at a time that could be steady approaching with all the name, image, and likeness stuff, the one-time transfer rules, like the rubber's starting to meet the road, but what are the things that this hangs on? Where are we truly at in this process? Heather Dinich was on SportsCenter earlier, our college football reporter, and she had this laying out the path forward for the 12-game playoff.
The next step comes Tuesday in Dallas, where the commissioners will try to get those 11 presidents and chancellors who comprise the CFP's board of managers on the same page, get them to buy into this 12-team format. And if they do, they get the green light. It's go ahead this summer and figure out how and when to implement it and if it's truly feasible. But like Bill Hancock mentioned, they would turn around then and talk to coaches, athletic directors, student athletes, their own university presidents to gauge the interest and if this can happen. And they want it to happen on their campuses, and then they would report back in September to those presidents again.
Okay, so the current playoff contract runs through that 2025-26 season. If expansion is ultimately approved, when could we see a playoff featuring more than four teams?
Well, Bill Hancock reiterated today it is not happening this season or next season. The earliest that it could happen is 2023. That being said, that doesn't necessarily mean it will. They still have to talk to ESPN. They have to talk to the Bulls, figure out how everyone is involved. And if the playoff is going to change before this 12-year contract expires, every single person involved has to agree to it. There are some commissioners in that room who think it could happen before the end of the 12 years, and there are others who need a little bit more convincing.
Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Trevor Scales. And man, I know we said it on the other side of that sound, Trev, but it is funny. And I don't mean this as a slight to Heather, because this isn't a Heather thing. She's talking about the people playing the game, but when we say that everyone in the process has to be consulted for this to change, we know that's not true.
It ain't everybody. It is not everybody, right? Like, I found it hilarious as she was sort of laying out the process of how this gets decided. I only go back to the terrible trades that were proposed for Julio Jones and the Falcons with the question at the end of it, who says no? Right? Like, that's all I could think of as that was being detailed. And, like, I can think of a couple people who would say no in this particular scenario, but they're not going to be listened to at the end of the day. So it's a matter of really just, again, aligning all of these financial institutions to the point where they all feel comfortable with the amount of money that they're going to make out of it, and that they have an assured spot in that money pot. That's what feels like the only thing that would hold back this thing happening.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be interesting, because I don't know if we'll end up having to sacrifice as much of the regular season as I previously thought for playoff expansion. And for the Bulls, quite frankly, I said this before, we basically just reverse-engineered the BCS again, right? Like, yeah, you'll have the same teams really meeting at the top on this one, like party in the backfield style, and then everyone else is basically just playing in games that are now wrapped in the coveted CFP moniker, the way the BCS games used to be for the Sugar Bowl, Rose Bowl, etc. on that. So you're going to know exactly where the money resides on this thing, and everyone else is going to divvy up the usual pot. And I think the increased popularity and conversation, maybe eventually it's got a trickle-down effect on recruiting. Maybe eventually it starts to spread out some of the wealth in college football when more schools and more places feel accessible to the ultimate prize that some players want in all of this, Trev. But at the end of the day, I feel like this is going to be a pretty easy way for the people that are going to get paid, that have the ability to get paid, to get what they want out of this ultimately result-wise.
Yeah, so, you know, too, like, it is the recruiting angle, like, everything is about on the basis of recruiting, because now it's another pitch of, hey, we've made this many college football playoff selections, and that is another tool to throw out there at the next young prospect that has a chance to play at one of these college football programs.
It is interesting, and I saw some, I wish I could remember who brought up this point. This is not my original point, so I don't want to take credit for it, but it was made. You wonder how something like that, the ability to put that as a resume point, because you see it, like, when I went back to Notre Dame when they made their new indoor facility, they've got all over the inside of that are, you know, the appearance in the BCS title game, the appearances in the college football playoff, very loudly presented the way all programs do. You wonder if that saves any coaches their jobs along the way. Mm. Like, if all of a sudden you're not winning national titles, but now as a coach you can say, like, all right, maybe you're Kirby Smart at Georgia and you've made a few more college football playoffs, even if you're not consistently beating Nick Saban, not consistently winning national titles. It's, you know, I mean, how different John Harbaugh's, or Jim Harbaugh, excuse me, is always always had to get past Ohio State in the Big Ten to try and get involved in this. Maybe if they've been in the 10-11 win threshold and getting a few college football playoffs, is the conversation maybe more different around Jim Harbaugh? I'm not sure, but I'm just asking the question here. Chenangle Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Coming up next, though, we'll ask a question of one of our great NBA analysts about Ben Simmons and what to expect from him heading into an all-important must-win Game 6 next on ESPN Radio.
Chenay and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Seven against the Bucks tomorrow night without Kyrie Irving. He sprained his right ankle in Game 4. The Hawks and Clippers can advance to the conference finals with wins at home tonight. Hawks and 76ers play Game 6 with coverage starting at 7 Eastern on ESPN Radio, TV, and the app. TV and the app will also have Jazz and Clippers at 10 Eastern. 2 years after his retirement as a player, Dirk Nowitzki comes back to the Mavericks as a special assistant in the front office. ESPN's Mark Spears wonders how much he'll really do.
Mark Cuban always gets in the way. He is the owner of the team, but he basically serves as a general manager, too.
Mark Spears on the Max Kellerman Show. Second round at the U.S. Open, England's Richard Bland holds the lead at 5-under, one ahead of Louis Oosthuizen, Russell Henley, and Rafa Cabrera-Bello. Canadiens interim coach Dominic Ducharme will miss tonight's Game 3 against the Golden Knights after testing positive for COVID-19. Luke Richardson takes over on the bench for Montreal. The series is tied at 1.
Chenay Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Trevor Scales. Guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. And if Jump Around's playing, that can only mean one thing. ESPN NBA analyst John Barry must be in the house right now. JB getting ready to be on the call for more great NBA action coming up later on ESPN Radio tonight as the Hawks and the Sixers duke it out in a must-win Game 6 for Philadelphia. John, how are we doing?
What's up? Ready to go. Should be fun. Everybody's jumping around here in Atlanta, that's for sure.
I guess I got to imagine, John, it's a strange position for Atlanta fans to be in where they've been playing with house money, it felt like, all postseason long, and now they've got this edge. So as you've watched this Atlanta team right now, has it gotten to a point where you are looking at this team as one that should close out tonight, that should go ahead and win tonight, even though Philly's been seen as the more talented team?
No, I wouldn't say that. I mean, if you take away the first quarter of Game 1 and then the last two fourth quarters of Game 4 and 5, Philly's really dominated the series. They just have not had the ability to close in those last two games, or they're the ones that would already be out of this thing. So, no, I think Philly is the better team. There's no doubt about it. But that's what the playoffs are all about, and you give a team life. And if I'm Atlanta, I'm thinking at some point our shooters are going to shoot. Because they haven't. They've been terrible from the three-point line. Young, Bogdanovich, Herter, all these guys in the low 30s from the three-point line, and they're much more capable shooters than that. So that's the posit I would take if I'm Atlanta. Like, boy, if we really get our shooters going, yeah, we will close this thing out, and this thing's going to be over.
Yeah, I think Atlanta shot like 29% from the floor in the first half of Game 5. Hopefully we get better out of Game 6 for we being the Atlanta Falcons.
I was going to say, you went right ahead with the we there, Trev.
I know. I'm
going to
call myself out there. I'm going to go ahead and just own that one. Back to the Sixers angle, though, John. When it comes to fatigue and what role that plays into these demises for the 76ers, how do you manage that if you're looking at Joel Embiid, who comes out firing on a game-by-game basis, but by the end of the fourth quarter, it is clear that he is dog-tired?
You're right. He's 57% in the first half shooting. He goes to 43% in the third quarter, and in the fourth quarters in this series, he's 9-for-25. So there is a wear down factor. There's no doubt about it. You know, the joke here in Atlanta is if you ask for change for a dollar from Embiid, you only get three quarters back. that's not my. I didn't say that. I'm just saying that's the joke in Atlanta. No, the bottom line is he has to get some help. And look, the last game, Seth Curry was the only other guy that made a field goal in the fourth quarter. Where was Tobias Harris? Tobias Harris had been terrific prior to that. He had seven straight games of 20-plus or more. He completely disappeared. And then if you want to look, let's talk Ben Simmons. You talk about fourth-quarter disappearance. In 63 fourth-quarter minutes in the playoffs this year, he's taken six shots. He's taken one shot in the last four fourth quarters. The last four games, he's taken one shot in the fourth quarter. So He's got to still be aggressive. I understand when he gets fouled, he doesn't want to get as aggressive, but he's got to play with some force. And Philly's at their best when he's got the basketball. He's pushing it. He's getting into the lane, and he has not done that in fourth quarters.
Chenan Gold Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Trevor Scales talking to ESPN NBA analyst John Barry. And to the Ben Simmons angle of this, this is obviously a must-win game. You said they're at their best when he is involved in those ways. But if we see similar stuff from Ben Simmons early in this game, if you're Doc Rivers, do you have to start coaching around him in the second half of this game, in the fourth quarters of this game, if this performance continues to creep up like this?
Well, I think so. I mean, you know, their butts are on the line. They're going home if they don't win. So if Atlanta's going to deploy the fouling again and Ben doesn't make foul shots, I don't know what that number is. I mean, do you give him four tries? Do you give him six tries? How many does he have to make? If he goes 50%, is that good enough to stay on the floor? If he misses them all, I got to take him off the floor. If he makes them all, obviously stays on the floor. So, that's certainly something that has to be thought about. But look, he's a guy that can still dominate a game despite the shooting woes. And we'll see. They're a better team when Ben Simmons is involved, and he's got to get involved here tonight.
Where, then, do you place the expectations for this Atlanta Hawks team? Like, going out there, you cannot expect, at least in my estimation, to come back from yet another double-digit deficit to the magnitude that they have. So how do you keep this thing close? And is that the right mindset going into Game 6, like not necessarily worried about a large deficit?
Well, you got to get off to a good start. Other than the first quarter, they lost every first quarter in this series, and it's been by at least 8 points. So you need to get off to a better start. And also, if you're ahead, that really puts the pressure on Philadelphia. So you want to play with the lead. Look, they want to play fast. They want to get fast break points. They don't want this half-court defense of Philadelphia to get set. They usually do that early, and then they get away from it. So they're going to push the tempo. They're playing smaller. They moved Herter into the lineup over the last couple of games. And making that three-point shot is huge. And we talked about it. They've been really struggling from that three-point line. They've gotten quality looks. If they knock some of those down early, their confidence grows. They'll play quicker. They'll play better on the defensive end. And they could have Philly in big trouble.
JB, Philadelphia, we know coming into this one with a lot on the line, but so is their coach Doc Rivers. We know that unfortunately he's become kind of known for some of these epic postseason collapses. So how much of that weighs on this at this point? How much blame can we assign to Doc Rivers in these situations in a league where we know the players control so much?
Yeah, you know, I guess you have the right to do that if you want. I mean, I know I hear in the timeouts what he's screaming at these guys to do, and, hey, quit dribbling the ball and not moving it and shooting late in the clock. And they don't have a guy on the floor. They don't have Chris Paul, you know. They don't have a guy that can take over, take the reins of this team and say, hey, this is what we have to do. And there's no go-between between Doc and one of their players. And you see it. We've seen in the last two fourth quarters that they stop playing. The tempo goes away. They play one-on-one basketball. They get poor shots. And like I said, if you had a Chris Paul out there, I can guarantee what would be happening. Joel Embiid, get your butt in the paint, and I'm throwing it to you every time. And that's what they need to do. Joel Embiid, quit settling for jump shots. Get in the paint. Make them double-team you because they got no one one-on-one that can handle you. You create shots for yourself, and if they double-team, you get shots for all your shooters, and you win this game.
On the opposite sideline, Nate McMillan has found some semblance of success that is just unbelievable since he took over as the interim head coach. What has been the key to success for Nate in the Hawks program?
Well, I think he's been great for Trae Young. Trae's not taken as many of those long, deep threes. He's getting the ball to the rim. Obviously, his floater game is as good as anybody in basketball. He and Capella in that high pick and roll is a really tough thing to guard. But Trey's been great. And why is Nate McMillan an interim coach, by the way? I mean, we've got seven other openings. This guy has been terrific. I think he's 20 games over 500 since he took over. But he's just been a calming influence on this team, and they've responded to him, obviously, and have a shot to go to the Eastern Conference Finals, believe it or not.
And that's what's on the line tonight. Again, coverage starting at 7:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, and you will hear our ESPN NBA analyst John Barry on the call for that. JB, we appreciate the time, man. Looking forward to it. Have a great game tonight.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Reminder, the NBA playoffs are on ESPN Radio tonight. That game six. Tony Snell and the Hawks host Shake Milton and the 76ers. Presented by Indeed. Coverage begins at 7 p.m. Eastern on most ESPN Radio stations. But coming up next, we are happy, free, confused, and lonely in the best ways. A big announcement from one of the biggest stars on planet Earth that we are going to celebrate in a big-time way next here on ESPN Radio and ESPN+. Plus.
Janae and Golden Jr., the podcast.
All right, so walk with me on this one real quick. As it's time for the Twerculator plays, as we send you off into Friday in the only way we can, throwing it in a circle right now, I got to ask you this. Trevor Scales, who's been kind enough to join us all day. Wendy's, this song, Collision Course. It's time for the Baconator makes too much sense. I have to imagine they've done this already, and if they haven't, I don't know. I feel like we probably shouldn't give this away for free right
now.
Bro,
I ain't seen it yet, so we need to keep this under wraps. Like, don't repeat it whatsoever. They got to go get into the podcast if it so chooses to land there. But no, Wendy's, we going to holler at y'all on the back, and we know y'all active on Twitter and whatnot. So, yeah, we got an idea for you. It has to do with the City Girls.
It is. Listen, a hot girl summer can include Wendy's. That's all I'm saying. Shanae Golick Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golick Jr., our thanks to Trevor Scales. You guys can catch him co-hosting Sports Nation right here on ESPN Plus each and every day. He mentioned that podcast. You can check him out there. You can also check out Joe Johnson, 7-time NBA All-Star who joined us earlier today. Kelvin Beachum, Arizona Cardinals offensive lineman who stopped by, as well as John Barry, our ESPN NBA analyst. If you missed any of those great conversations, download, subscribe, rate, review the Shanae and Golick Jr. podcast wherever you get that thing. But Trev, it has been a busy day here today. We have gotten full. We have had reason to dance and celebrate, and we got to get to even more of them next. Let's finish this thing out right. Keep that same energy. We want to be a jolt of energy.
Yeah, the energy level was really high there.
And now we want to keep that same energy going.
Keeping that same energy.
Keep that same energy.
You can just sense that there was a tremendous amount of energy.
With Janae and Golick Jr.
Keeping that same energy, Trevor, this is the good news we've been waiting a while for. I've been out here in Los Angeles all week, and my trip began on the plane flight watching Christian Eriksen and Denmark go through the most harrowing situation I've ever seen on an athletic field. The 29-year-old Denmark star went down when apparent cardiac arrest on the field, now has been released today from the hospital after a successful operation. And Trevor, I know we had a really touching moment. 10 minutes in, he wears the number 10 to the Denmark-Belgium game that people are seeing on ESPN+. A lot of people have been sending love to Christian Eriksen, and so it's great to see this news on the back end for him, his family, and so many that were affected by what they saw here.
The respect between those two teams was so apparent throughout the entirety of the match. You mentioned the 10-minute mark tribute, but there was also even the subdued celebration after the game-winning goal. There were so many different shows of respect and honor to. There was even fans waving outside of the hospital to Christian Eriksen. It was just so clear that everybody was rooting for this brother, and rightfully so. Glad to hear that he's on the mend.
Absolutely. We are all continuing to send thoughts and prayers that way as he continues healing here. Keeping that same energy, Trev, we've talked about a story in a very different vein for so much day. A Mississippi man spent 24 hours, well, ended up being 15 hours, inside a Waffle House because he lost his fantasy league. It was supposed to be 24. Every waffle he ate there shaved off an hour from this. And it got us to thinking, Trevor, Waffle House would be an absolutely joyous place to spend 24 hours. I think we both agree on that.
For the show alone, yes.
But what place do you think you'd be best equipped to actually spend 24 hours in public outside of the Waffle House here? Because I've always maintained that I could go Tom Hanks in the terminal and spend well more than 24 hours inside an airport successfully without getting caught. What about you?
I'm going to go not quite fully public, but my alma mater's Merce Center locker room, where we had everything we needed as football players, I damn near spent 24 hours there when it came to training camp. Like, we had a fridge. We had plenty of food, just snacks on deck, a shower and facilities and plumbing like that. And then also the entertainment factor. Big old couch, plenty of TV time. We was good to go there. I'll give you 24 hours there, no problem.
Oh, it felt like that during training camp most times. The fondest memories I have will always be in between two-a-days, sitting around with every locker room TV tuned in to Maury Povich, watching a bunch of folks dance and carry on there, finding out that they are apparently not someone's daddy. Janan Golic Jr. here. Keeping That Same Energy is brought to you by Geico. Whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get to geico.com today. We had Kelvin Beachum on, Arizona Cardinals offensive lineman, earlier, talking about the origins behind Juneteenth. Well, Major League Soccer on Thursday announced its plans to recognize Juneteenth, June 19th, the effective end of slavery in the United States. Their efforts of collaboration with the Black Players for Change, an organization of Black MLS players, coaches, and staff seeking to increase their inclusion in sports. They're going to include limited edition jerseys that will be auctioned and the playing of Lift Every Voice and Sing before this weekend's matches as people continue to embrace this part of American history, Trev.
Yeah, and it's a part of education in large part, but also just understanding that, yes, this is a holiday. And again, we had the conversation with Beachum, as you mentioned, and in that I mentioned this was more a holiday geared in the likes of Martin Luther King Jr. Day rather than Independence Day in my mind, where it is an idea that we should probably take note of what it is this entails more so than just the celebration outright.
Absolutely. Could not agree more, Trevor. That is something very serious. In an entirely different vein, though, today was a cause of celebration for your boy because Miss Taylor Swift took to social media, as she so rarely does, with an announcement that she continues to re-record her albums to own her history as a musician here. Red will be the next album. Well, for my argument, one of the top three Taylor Swift albums ever made. November 19th will be the date. We are getting a 10-minute long version of All Too Well, Trevor, the song that will no doubt haunt Jake Gyllenhaal's dreams forever. He will never know peace as long as she lives, and I couldn't be more excited, and I can see you share that, Trev.
Let me get three songs that I need to listen to, because you're going to have to give me some convincing to listen to T-Swift.
Oh, Trev, I mean, the All Too Well, if that's not enough of a sell, Holy Ground is an absolute classic. 22 was the song of our college experience. Who else was stomping around a bar late at night? No, just me on that one, pouring drinks on myself to the tune of 22.
Yeah, you got that, Playboy.
All right, well, I'll hold that one down. ESPN Radio's got the NBA for you next.
Thanks for listening to Janae and Golic Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.